Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Indie Business Podcast. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. As small and independent business owners, we have a lot of plates to juggle. If we're not actually doing everything, we're at least leading others as they do some of the work that needs to be done to grow our businesses for us. Doing and leading takes time, at least if you're going to do them well. And this usually means that no matter what, you are spending most of the working weekdays working your business. So what happens when life gets in the way? You know what I mean. I don't mean cutting your finger and having to stop and get a Band-Aid or having to drop project number one because of an emergency meeting you have to call to deal with project number two. I mean something really serious. What would you do? How would you handle it? If your business pays the bills, you can't just drop it, even when tragedy strikes. I know this from my own experience when my father passed away a few years ago after a long and traumatic illness. Today's guests know what I'm talking about, and they are here to help. They are Linda and Tony Cole, authors of Resurrecting Anthony, a true story of courage and destination. Tony and Linda are the co-founders of Anthony Cole Training Group, established in 1991 to help salespeople and their organizations drive consistent and predictable results through tailored strategies. When their son was diagnosed with an unexpected illness, they sprang into action, and this book is the story of their challenges and eventual triumph over a situation that could have, but did not, kill their family or their business. Welcome, Tony and Linda Cole, to Indie Business Podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Well, let me just start, first of all, Linda, by asking a paramount question and one that's been on my mind since I got your book a few weeks ago. How is Anthony?
Anthony is doing as well as can be expected, maybe better in some respects. He, of course, is a different person today than he was 12-plus years ago. He's fully dependent in a wheelchair, and we have nursing help to keep him functional and to get everything covered. But he's a joy emotionally and mentally. He is involved, and although not totally oriented to time and place, he is loving, has good sense of humor, and, I mean, he's Anthony.
I'm glad to hear that. And, you know, I want to tell our listeners that your book, Resurrecting Anthony, has a nice photo montage in the middle. And as I was looking through here, I was going from the first photos to the last ones in here, which look like they're just from about a year and a half ago. And I'm so touched, Tony, by the photograph on page 104 of you and some family members, it looks like, and Anthony clutching your hand.
Yeah,
that's a beautiful, just lovely. And when you compare it to some of the pictures at the beginning, you know, I just am so touched and so excited that he's doing so well. But I imagine, Tony, that, and Linda too, as the owners of a business, at some point, of course, you know, when a child is ill, you know, everything stops and your mind just completely focuses on that situation. At some point, you have to start thinking about the business. Can you take us back to the moments in time, the weeks when you were dealing with this initially, when I guess it may have sort of, you know, sort of dawned that, you know, I can't go to the hospital today, or I can't do what I'd like to do because I have to tend to the business. Tony, was there a time when you felt that, and how did that affect you during this early process?
Well, it was. I'd say probably within some time in the first 30 days. I don't know that it was a Monday or Wednesday or 10 days or something like that. But because of our the nature of our business is a consulting practice, working with business, we have a client base that expected certain deliverables to take place on certain dates that had already been scheduled, and so on and so forth. So. Anthony's cardiac arrest happened on a Tuesday. It was a Tuesday following Labor Day, so I didn't have anything scheduled that week, but I knew I had appointment scheduled the following week. So I believe it was probably Thursday or so when I started to contact clients and let them know what was going on. And what was really amazing, one of the amazing things, not the only amazing thing, is how people responded to our business. And so I'm not sure if you have this question somewhere that you want to ask today, but one of the things that helped us survive our business is the depth of relationship we had with our clients. They cared about us intimately, and I don't say gave us a hall pass, but understood and said, take your time, do what you need to do, we'll catch up later. And so that gave us some breathing room. But I would say with about 30 days or so that once we kind of figured out that this was a permanent solution, and then we realized that we need to get back on, I mean, not a permanent solution, but we had a permanent situation, then we realized that I need to get back on the road and make money.
I love that you mentioned that relationship because I do think that relationships are the foundation of so many things, and business in particular. So I'm so excited that you mentioned that because I want to ask you some of the things that you did to develop that kind of relationship with your customers so that that platform was in place. Our listeners today are manufacturers. Well, they do a lot of different things, but a lot of them are manufacturers of products. They're made here in the USA. So they have manufacturing that's got to be done. There's a website up that sells products, and there's a shopping cart, and people are ready to buy their products. So if things stop and they, you know, do what you had to do, which is call some customers or send out emails or whatever and let people know, those relationships need to be in place. Can you share some tips with us, Tony, about how you structured your business generally to put those relationships in place so you could have this kind of flexibility when you needed it?
Well, there's a couple things that helped us keep our relationships. And one of the things is you know, Linda's piece in the business, aside from the marketing and the think tank and the partnership in terms of how the business goes, obviously she was our constant contact with clients when I was out on the road, billings, questions, concerns. And so, you know, we had more than just a relationship with me with these clients. And in many cases, you know, they got to know her very well. Hey, Linda, how you doing? What's going on? And so on and so forth. And so there was an element to that. In addition to that, our business model is such where it's very relationship-based. When we start to work with presidents of companies and we're traveling, we make it a point that at the end of the day to schedule time with them, to go have dinner, break bread, you know, discuss what happened that day. And you can't help yourself but find out about the intimate facts about their family. You know, we talk about Tim in the book, and early on in my relationship with him, we found out a couple things. One, we were strong Christian men that care deeply about our families. But one of my early visits, Tim is off to the hospital because his daughter broke her back. You know, and so when you live through things like that with each other, that strengthens the relationship. And then the other part is that our business isn't a business that's based on come in and do a transaction. It's a long-term relationship we have with clients because we're trying to help them develop a sales culture and develop their salespeople and change their behaviors, and so that takes a while. So we get a chance to spend a lot of time with people for an extended period of time, and so I would say that those are the contributing factors that help us.
And Linda, I know I'm so excited that Tony mentioned the vital part that you play as a team member in your business, and that is very apparent and present throughout the book as well. So what are your perspectives on, you know, take me back in time to when you first, you know, after that approximate 30-day period when things sort of, you know, became realistic. I know from the book you do a lot of the, you know, organizing and financial part of the business as well. How did you, what mindset, Linda, did you have to adopt as a mother and as a wife and as a business owner to put all this together and keep all these plates in the air?
You know, early on, I would say for probably the first probably year or two, I had to take a step back. I had to focus my energies on Anthony and our daughter and our home, life. I had to get nursing together, and as people will read, it was such an overwhelming situation that everything in our lives changed basically overnight when Anthony got sick. And so I focused. Tony and I are very good at doing what needs to get done, and we decided to divvy up the responsibilities. And Tony took over a lot of the contact with the clients that I had had, and I continued to pay bills and invoice, but on a scale that was much less than what I had done before. And interestingly, about that time, in fact, the day after Anthony got sick, a new person was coming into our office. So literally that person came into the office and things were handed off to her. All of the client contact in terms of answering the phone and handling certain things. And I would run in and try and train them in brief periods because I didn't often leave the hospital during the day except to be with our daughter. So in essence, I think Tony and I focused to get whatever we had to get done, and that's how we did it. There was no such thing as balance, and we gave certain responsibilities to each other.
I love the idea of no such thing as balance. I think that's such a fallacy that sets people up for failure. But what I'm hearing you talk about is teamwork.
Yeah, I would say definitely. That's
so great. Let's take that a step further then, because when you combine the relationships that when no one was ill or having to deal with issues like this that were developed over a period of time when you had that freedom, it's almost like, preparation meeting opportunity, right? The relationships were in place, and that helped you maintain the business. And then you also had your team in place as a married couple to be able to sit down during a stressful time and say, okay, you know, here's the black and white of it. You have to do this. I have to do this. Let's just go do it.
Yep, I would say definitely. And that's exactly how we managed to get through it.
Now, was this an ongoing process, Tony? In other words, I'm wondering if the first time you sat down and you mapped sort of out the you do this, I do that, did things go like clockwork, or did you have to sit down and remap it out and switch things around a little bit as the situation evolved?
We've been in business now for, 16 to 17 years, Linda, something like that. I don't know that anything under best circumstances works like clockwork, you know.
Okay.
I just don't know that it does. You know, maybe it's a clock that's, you know, starts and stops and eventually gets on time, you know. So yes, it continued to evolve. Yes, we had to continue to make adjustments, and the biggest adjustment, you know, was really for Linda. I mean, it really was. I mentioned this to our PR firm that works with us early on, that when people read this book, and Linda wrote a wonderful story through my eyes and through my head, and, you know, it's supposed to make me sound like some sort of, hero, great guy, all that kind of stuff. But in reality is Linda's the heroine, because for me, my life didn't change a lot once I left Cincinnati. It was business as usual. For Linda, she's the one that had all these new additional balls that had to juggle. I mean, Anthony comes home sometime the first week of December, over a weekend. I leave on Monday, and she's got Anthony still throwing up and stuff, and she can tell more about that story. You know, so I had it easy.
When you left on that Monday, you were going for business, right?
Yeah.
And so... again, more teamwork here, right? Because I'm sure it must have been very difficult to leave, and it was also very difficult to stay, right?
Yeah, I would say it probably was.
Yeah. So so now I'm detecting something else. I'm detecting the relationships that allowed you the flexibility and freedom that you needed to do what you needed to do, the teamwork between the two of you, and also the communication. I would imagine that as a couple in business, you have levels of communication, right? You have business communication, you have personal communication, and now you have health communication. And you know, looking through the book, there's some wonderful tips. And I encourage readers and listeners who are with us now to make sure you get this book if you need a primer on how to advocate the healthcare system for a healthcare member. Amazing tips and strategies in there. So in terms of that communication, what are your tips on how you kept those lines of communication open? And I know from the book, you know, to be honest, there were some times of extreme frustration for both of you.
Yeah, I wish I could pull out the notebook and say, this is how we did it. A lot of times people have asked us about how did we manage to keep our relationship together, our marriage together, and I give them the following answer because I think it pertains here as well in terms of how we kept this together, and it starts with that failure was never an option, you know, and there aren't any rules for this. It's not like someone hands you a book that says, okay, so when your son has a cardiac arrest and is in a coma for 90 days, this is what you do. You know, there are books about business planning and books around strategy and books and all that kind of stuff. But there isn't a book for this one. So, I don't know. Linda, your thoughts on how we managed to continue to communicate and make it work?
You know, honestly, I would say we tried not to communicate. That sounds funny. But the reality is we were in such a state emotionally that we were overwrought. And so what we had was a good team of nurses. We had good family support. And we had our daughter. And, of course, we had to function. And we had to keep moving forward. And in order to do that, I think we kind of kept a lot to ourselves. We spoke minimally during this traumatic period, I would say. And it was self-preservation, because what you didn't want to do is make it worse for the other party.
And so you both had this failure is not an option understanding, even though it wasn't something that everybody was articulating in a formal sense every day.
Absolutely. And giving up the business was never an option.
Well, you know, I was just going to go there because what I think I'm seeing in today's society is more and more people wanting to be successful in their businesses, not just because they want to, but kind of because they have to. A little bit more is at stake, I think, at this season of the century than in prior years and hopefully in future ones as well. So that failure is not an option is something that has to permeate the business and the family on totally different levels that are interconnected, obviously.
Again, not to make us sound like, you know, we're some super geniuses about this thing or not, but we start with a mentality of failure is not an option. We take responsibility for the things that got done or didn't get done. You know, when things fell through the cracks, you know, it was like, oh yeah, I forgot, or yeah, you know. And to Linda's point, instead of, you know, continuing to pick at that omission or something like that, was you know, just move on. My gut tells me that one of the challenges for businesses today, especially over the last couple of years and moving forward with economic challenges, is it's become easy for people to make excuses and blame the economy or blame something else, and so kind of throw up their hands and say, too tough, I quit, you know, and so they file bankruptcy or do this, that, and the other thing. And you know, everybody faces some sort of tragedy in their life, and so. But when you take responsibility and say, "Okay, it's not an option to let this thing fold. It's not an option to not take care of Anthony. It's not an option to get nursing in line." Then nothing gets in the way. And if businesses are going to survive, then that's the mentality they have to have. I don't care how big or small they are. You know, they are 100% responsible for the results that they're getting.
Excellent point. I love that. It's the first chapter in one of my favorite books, The Success Principles by Jack Canfield. Take 100% responsibility for your life. Thank you for sharing that. I want to direct your attention, Tony and Linda, to page 165 of your book, where you talk about someone named Mike Lutie, who gave you some great advice about not losing the business. So there's a little episode actually starting on page 167 where it looks like, you know, the shock of everything you had been through had you know, gotten, you know, almost, I don't know if the word is subconsciously, that's not what you said, that's my word, but it's sort of taken you away from your quote-unquote real job, the job of selling. So here's why I'm mentioning this. So many small business owners and entrepreneurs who are, they're not natural salespeople. It's not like they went to business school and took sales classes. They're running a business. And you know, they you know, want to be successful, as you just described, but they don't always realize that even though they're making products or delivering sales training presentations, as you may do, their real job is to make sales, and that process cannot stop, at least not for long. Because if it does, there goes the business. So, can you share a little bit? Take us back to that moment in time when it sort of dawned on both of you, actually, because this is a passage of the book that describes an interaction between the two of you. But just starting with Tony, and then Linda, I'd like to hear from you as well. Take us back to that moment when that light bulb seems like it came on in your head. Oh, my goodness, I've got to get back to my number one job, which is generating sales, generating new business.
Yeah, there are two events, and we'll start with this one, and I don't know if you'll get to the second one or not, but Linda can talk about that. But certainly it's to set the stage, I guess, for your readers, it's Halloween, and our kids are out and going from door to door, and you know, Mike Lutie and I are just walking and watching our kids, and we're just chatting. And Mike is sympathetic; he's a willing listener, just checking on how you're doing and all that kind of stuff. And I'll have to, you know, kind of paraphrase, but he says, you know, Tony, I know this is tough on you right now, and the things are a mess, So I got to tell you the biggest mistake I made when our son Chris had taken ill with cancer, and we knew that history, but he gave me a little more detail about it, and he said, Lynn and I were so wrapped up, we lost focus on everything else except for getting Chris better, and next thing you knew, I woke up one day and my business was gone, and it's the biggest mistake I made, and Tony, you can take that for what it's worth. You can tell me to shut up and go away or whatever, but that's my best advice, is make sure you don't take your eye off the ball. And I don't recall, Linda, if you and I talked about that night, but certainly it was important enough for us to include it in the book and serve as a reminder to other businesses and people in general that are going through something like this, is you can't lose sight of the money machine.
You can't lose sight of the money machine. And so, and you know, if you have a business, that is your number one job, is to generate sales. And of course, there's a million other things that go into doing that, which maybe to some extent, Linda, kind of comes back to those relationships, huh?
Yep, sure does.
So as you experienced this scenario with Mike, and he was, what a great friend to have, right? Someone who had been through something that was on par with what you've been through, which I certainly haven't. So what a blessing it is to have a person like that to tell you like it is from experience, not just because it's the right thing to say or tell you to do.
Yeah, it was pretty meaningful. In addition to that story, there's another story that I'd like Linda to tell your audience that's later in the book, but it's really because – as you've talked about all along about our relationship together, Linda was a great partner in business, still is a great partner in business, and her style is very good at reminding me of where I need to be focused, and there's a point later on in the book where she does a great job of that, and Linda, I'd like for you to speak to that.
I think that's what part of what she was leading up to is that it was shortly after Thanksgiving, and I came into Tony's office, and I asked him when he was going to sell again, insulting him in the process, told him that he was a trainer, that he hadn't sold anything, and we were losing accounts, and our revenue was dropping. And, you know, this was the kind of, how do I say this, communication we had was always fairly cursory and direct, right, because we had certain things we had to get done, and we didn't beat around the bush a whole lot, so I hope everybody doesn't take offense, but the reality is we are in crisis mode here, and we were losing business, and Tony, of course, gets defensive and says, you don't know how hard it is, and I've been doing this for clients, and making excuses, in other words. And after we have, you know, a scene, so to speak, I, of course, leave the office, and Tony realizes immediately, by the way, one of the things Tony's very good at is recognizing when he is at fault or he needs to change. And so he recognizes almost immediately that he needs to get back to work, that he'd been making excuses just like all the other salespeople that he trains. And so it's come full circle. What he does out in the field, he's listening to salespeople make excuses, not get the job done, and here he is, and he recognizes it. And so he corrects it after that.
Well, that's a nice little reminder. It makes me think about our children and how we tell them how to behave, and then suddenly we do something, well, I should say me, do something I've told them not to do, and they kind of give me that look like, Mommy. But that's such a good thing to point out, too, because it reminds us of how important it is, whether we're dealing with a trauma or not in our lives, to be teachable, to be humble, to always be learning from other people.
Yeah, I mean, to your point about this tragedy, I mean, it's and I don't know that I thought about this consciously, but, you know, I had a very good excuse. You know, my son had suffered a cardiac arrest. He was never going to be the same, and so I had a very good excuse, you know, you know, Linda called me on it, you know, and she kind of set me up. She walked and said, listen, I have something really important to talk to you about, and I thought it was going to be something about Anthony, and then she hit me between the eyes with the, are you ever going to sell again?
Right.
You know? So, you know,
right.
And I got mad and then went to
really
work.
Good point. You had the best excuse that I've ever heard.
It's a pretty good one.
It's a really good one. So tell me this, Tony and Linda, what is the, I'm not sure how to formulate this question because I kind of am anticipating what you'll say. I hope I may be wrong, but what is the difference then between, I guess, the mindset? Can you identify anything that stands out outside of failure's not an option? Can you identify anything that stands out that makes you know that the one thing you've got to have to not fall prey to, well, I do have the best excuse in the world, therefore I'm just going to fold my hands and let the chips fall where they may. What's the difference between a person who makes the decision not to do that and the one who does? Because both are understandable. Both are, in some respects, admirable. I mean, you have to stop everything to take care of your child. Therefore, the business goes. The child is okay. No business. You win something, right? What's the difference, Tony?
Off the top of my head, and that's a great question, and all I can do is describe why I think we made the decisions we made, and it's a part of part of a planning process, because once we started to sort through how bad the problem was, and how bad the problem was going to continue to be, at some point in time you start to think about money. And the cost associated with this, so I think that was probably the genesis. And we both loved doing what we're doing. I mean, one that is kind of interesting is that we were very blessed to have our own business where we could have the flexibility mentioned before, versus being in a role that was 8-to-5, where we would have all kinds of restrictions and a lot of pressure from a company saying, "Geez, Tony, we love you, but you got to come back to work," and all that kind of stuff. You know, and because we owned the money machine, it was easy for me to say, well, you know, I got to really go crank this thing up now. So I think the first part of the answer is this, and that is you've got to have some very specific goals, okay, that are non-negotiable goals. And the non-negotiable goal was, for me, and I can't speak for Linda, was that we were I never wanted to be in a situation where we couldn't provide for Anthony the way we wanted to provide for him to have as normal of a lifestyle as we could. And I knew that that was going to take a lot of money. And so
that's a great point. And unfortunately, we are out of time. ResurrectingAnthony.com is the book. Tony and Linda Cole, Set Those Goals. These are great tips. We'll see you next week right here on Indie Business Podcast. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.